I'm more than happy to support you guys. I was just kind of fiddling around, so I didn't mean to ignore you, Vadim.
No, that's right. Bet you have a lot on your plate, and everybody at IPR probably does.
Very much so. But we're all like super dedicated to this work, and I adore the team that we are a part of. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We almost have like the same version of a haircut, except I've got the curly and you've got the straight version.
Taylor, I'm growing my hair out. One day, you and I will be twins.
Hey, Shayna, did you like your new job at Bowley?
Well, it's not entirely new. I've been there since May, so I've got about 6+ months under my belt, but so far so good.
Yeah, one of our IPR investigator used to work for Bowley, so.
Who was that?
Caddy Castell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they new or they?
No, she's been with us for several years now.
Oh, I met her.
Yeah. She used to work for Bowley.
Nice. And she came right over to CRC from there?
No. She's an IPR investigator.
Oh, I mean IPR.
Yeah.
So she came from Bowley. Gotta love all the acronyms, right? So she was investigator. Was she in the Civil Rights Division?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed Carol was still on one of the subcommittees.
Oh, okay.
For one of our CRC subcommittees.
Oh, okay. That information is outdated. We'll get that fixed.
Okay. I was just being wishful.
We're at 5:30, but we'll just give it about 30 more seconds to make sure if Sylvan will join us, and then we'll get started. Okay, I say we go ahead and start. Welcome everybody to the December 2nd, 2020 Citizen Review Committee meeting. I'm Candace Avalos, the CRC chair. We're gonna go ahead and have folks in the room here on the panel introduce themselves with name, pronouns, what area of Portland you represent, and position. So Candace, she, her, CRC chair, Northeast Portland. And I'm gonna just call your name, starting with Irene.
Irene Conant, I'm the outreach coordinator for the Independent Police Review.
Oh, Vadim.
Hi, everybody. Vadim Mazursky. I live in Southwest Portland.
Shayna.
Good evening. I'm Shayna Pomerantz. I'm a member of the CRC, and I was previously in St. John's. Now I'm in Northeast Cully neighborhood, and I'm here as we mentioned my Bowley work, but I'm here as a representative of Race Talks.
Julie.
Hi, my name is Julie Falk. I'm a CRC member, and I live in Southwest Portland.
Taylor.
Taylor, Snell, he, him. I'm in Southeast Portland, Selwood, and I'm a CRC member.
Ross.
Ross Caldwell, IPR. Hello, everybody.
Whoops, I was muted, wasn't I? Jihan.
Good evening, everyone. Jihan Nami, CRC, Southeast Portland, she, her.
And Andy.
Hi, everyone. Andy Chiller, she, her pronouns, CRC member, and I'm in Southeast Portland.
Great. I'm still trying to figure out all the rules here, but I think I understood that if we wanted to open the chat for a brief moment, we can on certain things. Can I open the chat to ask members of the audience to introduce themselves, or do we have to do the whole thing where they got to come and speak?
I don't remember the rules on that. Do whatever you want.
Okay. I want to simulate it to the best of our ability, but I also don't want to take up too much time because it just is, it's laggy on Zoom. So chat is open. If folks in the audience who are attending want to share their name, their affiliation, their pronouns, and what area of Portland they are representing, if applicable, go ahead and please do that right now. And we'll have those come in as we start moving towards the next thing. So today we don't have an appeal. Mostly our agenda is talking big picture issues, brainstorming, and we'll get to as much of that as we can and kind of just, I'll play it by ear and see what's the best approach. I tried to create some starting questions to figure out how to frame the conversation, but we'll kind of just see what everyone is thinking and go from there. And then one thing, Shayna had, also real quick, minutes. We are not approving any minutes right now. We will approve them in January. That's correct, right, Irene? Is that what I'm understanding? Okay. So no minutes for now. So Shayna had mentioned about creating like a check-in of some kind. And I think this is something that, you know, over the years on the CRC, it's goes kind of back and forth on what level we want to do things like that. Like, I think sometimes people are like really serious and, you know, we just want to get to business. And other times people want to, you know, have a little bit more like get to know you or just interacting with each other as human beings. I am definitely the icebreaker queen because I work in higher education and I do that all day. So I'm always down for that. But I know not everybody always is. And again, the nature of our committee sometimes makes it like we don't prioritize it. So I'm putting on a what's good check-in. We can always check in before the check-in if people are like, no, we got to do the appeal, let's get on it. But obviously today we don't have an appeal, so I think we should take just a moment to share that, especially there's been a lot going on and it's good to just make sure that we're all connecting, like, hey, we've got real lives, we're real people, and let's just take a moment to do that. So what's good is something I do in other committees, which is just what's good. Something going on in your life that you want to share with obviously a public audience. So be, you know, use your own discretion on that. And you know, anything else, if you want to add, that's fine. So I'll model it. Hi, Candace. What's good for me? And you know, I did that and then I was like, crap, I don't have one. No, I have something. What's good for me is that it is finals week at PSU next week. So my students are winding down, which means I get a break. My calendar frees up a little bit. There's a little less panicky meetings and more study. So I am excited to have a little breather, and I have a staycation coming up in 2 weeks. So yeah, planning on not doing much during that staycation. And I'll just have, we'll just popcorn it to the next person. So I'm gonna popcorn it over to Shayna.
Hello, everyone. And I wanted to also just say congratulations to Candace and Vadim for being selected to the charter committee. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. Yep.
Kudos, super excited. Was really excited to see your names there with some other familiar names that I recognized. So I think we have another person. I don't know if I can call people out on the attendee list, but I see one of our other selectees on the list who's here tonight. So kudos to everyone. It's been a bittersweet month and a half. Our family lost our matriarch. My grandmother passed. She was 101 years old. And I was with her when she made her transition. It was a beautiful thing. She got a chance to vote in the election. And I even posted it on Pantsuit Nation, and she got like 70,000 hits. So that was like incredible. And I shared it with her with the comments and everything, and the technology was a little too much for her, but just being able to have that experience with her before she passed was just really awesome. So I've actually been on bereavement leave and go back to work tomorrow. So I've just been trying to take some time to kind of recover. It's been a little hectic under COVID, to say the least. So I know everybody's been having really crazy experiences. So every week it seems like it's something new going on. So yeah, I will popcorn over to Julie.
I will follow up that, and I'm sorry to hear about your loss, Shayna, with something far more mundane. I'm just happy about the weather and the cold, and I am one of these people that really likes when it gets dark early. And so I am in my sweet spot right now. I love the dark early. It feels, when I was working in an office, I loved it because you thought like, oh my gosh, it's almost time to go home. And then you're like, no, I have a few more hours before I have to be done today. So I love that then, and I love it now because I just think I love the way the dark envelops us during this time of the year. So I'm happy about that.
Popcorn it to the next person, Julie.
Oh, Jihan.
Thanks. Total opposite of Julie. I'm going to go with Christmas lights. And I'll send it over to Taylor.
Let's see. I've been kind of stoked, similar to Candace. My work's been slowing down, but I'm a public defender in Washington County, and they've been really, I was talking with Ross before this, but they've been really pushing us. We've had tons and tons of cases piling up during the coronavirus, and there's been over the last 2 months like a huge push to resolve tons and tons of cases, and it's finally kind of slowing down, and it's really nice to feel like, I don't know, a little bit out from underneath a giant stack of clients. So pretty stoked on that. And I went surfing last weekend, which I hadn't done in a couple months. Very stoked on that. So that's what's been good. I'll popcorn to Andy.
So because life in COVID with an infant, a toddler, and a dog is not bananas enough, we got two kittens. Two polydactyl crazy kittens. Here's one. That's Ruthie. Oh my God. She's got extra toes.
Oh.
And she has a brother, Thunder, who also has extra toes. And they are wacky and just full of shenanigans and adorable and like little furry balls of therapy. So it's been nice having little furry babies in the house, and they're adorable. And we have a lot of time to socialize kittens because we're here all the time. So that's pretty good for us. I will popcorn it over to, Sylvan's here. I'll popcorn it over to them.
Hi, thanks. Sorry, I didn't realize my video wasn't on until just a second ago. My good thing is your two polydactyl kittens. Obviously, that's the best news I've heard recently. I guess that's a cop out. Things are fine. I worked 80 hours last week. I haven't slept more than 4 hours a night for the last few nights. I'm doing okay, but like not all the way here. So I'm gonna popcorn it to the dean.
Like the rest of y'all, I've had about 3 weeks of really busy work, and that ended about a week ago. And over the last week, I've spent 4 days at Mount Hood snowboarding. So I'm somewhere between Julie and Jihan. I love the sun. I wish it would last a little bit longer, though. But it's been really nice on the mountain. And I did not realize cats could have extra toes. I'm going to have to look that up. Thanks, Andy. And I'll shoot it over to the only other person I see here is Ross.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize we were on the hook for this. Let's see what's good. I'm just glad the election is over and behind us. That's my what's good thing. There's been so much buildup to that, and it's finally done. So that's very nice. I think I am grateful for that every day. So do I need to pick a new person? Is there anybody who hasn't?
Irene
hasn't gone. Yeah.
I would have to say the sun today was just amazing. I loved it. And it was actually warm, not just sunny. So that's my good thing.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for connecting, taking a moment to do that. So on our agenda for today, it's kind of loose and open-ended, but again, and in the doc that you all are following, there's another doc down there under, Sorry, totally missed the reports. Never mind. IPR report is first. Go ahead, Ross.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah, thank you. I'll be pretty quick. We don't have a ton new to report. We're obviously still operating under the COVID restrictions. The latest we have heard from the city with kind of, and I think everybody's probably heard about the same thing, so this isn't really news, but if vaccines roll out the way people are hoping, we would maybe be back to work in person sometime in the spring, summer, something like that. You know, we've heard lots of target dates and then they just keep disappearing into the rearview mirror. So I'll believe it when I see it, but it's certainly possible, I guess. So that would be nice. It would be really weird to be back at work in person right now. I kind of have forgotten what that's like, but hopefully we'll get a chance to remember it. Under our staff training, we've had this on here a couple of times before, but we've done our third set of racial equity results-based accountability training. That was all auditor's office staff. So all, I think it's about 50 people. So we've done that. Irene has put something in there about community outreach. So those are some of the meetings that we've attended. And then I think Dana and I have attended a few more. Let's see. Yeah, bigger news in CJC recruitment, or I'm sorry, CRC recruitment. Irene has been working on this, as has Casey Jones in our office. So I think we've reached out to the applicants who had originally applied, kind of pre-ballot measure, to see, make sure everybody's still interested. And I think Irene has reached out to a few of you to see if you'd be willing to help score interviews and stuff like that. So we're getting that process rolling again, and we'll have more details. I don't think we have like a time in mind of when we'll have new people, but I don't know, probably, you think, Irene, maybe a month or so out, month or two, maybe something like that. Is that kind of realistic for how we've done it in the past?
Probably not till hopefully February meeting, because there's a really big process of selection, training, and then background checks. And background checks.
Oh, right. Yeah.
A long, long time. And I'm just going to drop the director's report in here again. It's already in there, but I'm going to drop it in right now. And if I could take a moment to also congratulate both Candace and Vadim for being part of the review commission. And I know that I see that Salome Chimikyu is here too, and she's also on that. So congratulations to all three of you.
Yay, thank you so much.
That's obviously really exciting. The other stuff in there is just kind of all of our numbers that are always in there. Sorry to interrupt you, Candace.
No, you're good.
Take a look at that. If anybody's got any questions, please let me know. You can ask me now or send me an email or something like that. The biggest thing I think that has changed is that I think we've now got less coming in the door from the protest than we have for the last several months. So I'm really looking forward to us having a chance of kind of digging out of all our cases and getting those all through. So that's kind of the main thing. And you never know. I mean, things could definitely tick up again, but so far it seems like things are slowing down pretty significantly.
Thank you. Just real quick from the chat, I'm confused what you're asking, Shayna.
So I was reading, Mr. Handelman was saying if we were in the room together, folks would be able to see. So since we're using the webinar format, not everybody has introduced themselves, or if anybody comes in, then they don't have the ability to see who's previously introduced themselves in the chat. So is there a way to let folks know who is here, or I don't know if folks want to be anonymous, or, you know, so I don't want to
start. Part of the problem is everybody sent it to all panelists, so they didn't see it. So maybe I just noticed that. So everybody that went in the chat, copy paste what you wrote and make sure you select all panelists and attendees so that the attendees can see it. Because right now you all only sent it to us on the panel.
We have 17 attendees and 3 are on calls that we don't see who they are. We just see phone numbers.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm totally open to, you know, hearing from the rest of the committee how we think we can better improve mimicking what we had in person. I mean, it's definitely been tough just trying to get everything exactly the same. It's just not always going to be, you know, we're not going to be able to get it completely right. But if there's better ways that we can approach it, I'm open to ideas. And obviously, we've got the new rules that, like, I constantly, they're a lot. I think it's a lot of rules that, in my opinion, is like too much. But I would prefer that we keep the chat open and that, you know, there's some kind of flow, especially in meetings like this where it's not an appeal. So does anybody have initial thoughts on that? We can keep thinking about it and improving for the future, but does anyone have initial thoughts? Great. So I will go ahead and do my report then. So my report is just to update you on the conversation Vadim and I had with Mayor Wheeler in our check-in. So basically he was talking about how he is, you know, as a police commissioner, he's working on figuring out of doing an audit of like response times of police. So just wanting to assess like what is the lag, what is causing the lag, and how to like fix it. I mean, that's a very oversimplified way of explaining it, but that's the gist. So I thought that was interesting and curious to, you know, hear more about what the outcome of that audit looks like. And maybe it's something more policy committee that can kind of dive deeper into what's going on there. But just wanted to put it on your radar. And the other thing was we asked him about the new community safety transition director position. I don't know if folks have heard of it. It's going to be in the Office of Management and Finance, I'm pretty sure. And we were just curious, what is that, like, what does it mean? How does it relate to like reform efforts or just issues of police accountability or the different advisory councils, et cetera? So basically what we learned was that they're going to be restarting the search. They had the search. They're going to be launching it again. And obviously, there are limited resources across general fund due to COVID, and they're needing to weed out any inefficiencies. And this role would be there to kind of take a deeper look at that and also have a more broad strategic thinking on how to align the budgets of all the public safety bureaus, so police, fire, 911 communications, all of that. But it's not a position that is the front line for police reform necessarily. And they will still have, this position reports kind of up the chain to the police, to the bureau chiefs. I was just curious, you know, what that means as far as like, is that an effort to bring about, you know, kind of unite everything? Because there's just so much, there's all the advisory boards. Obviously, the public has an interest in seeing things change and just wanting to see like what he felt the role of that was. So that was kind of the gist that he gave me. Also, I mean, it's new, so I'm sure that the role will be redefined or on the job as like things come up. But that was kind of what he shared. And am I missing anything you think, Vadim, from that or anything else from the meeting? That's all I had to report. Okay. And I also wanted to take a moment to check in. I put on So when you go into our CRC folder and you look at the, hold on, let me find the title of the document so I can tell you exactly what I mean. When you go into the public folder, you go into templates and you go into the workgroup assignments and CRC contact. Obviously we have new commissioners coming in, so I wanted to just take a quick moment and reassign folks, especially since we're all here. So, you know, Vadim and I, we meet with the mayor. I have that Taylor and Shayna, you know, you all were Commissioner Hardesty's liaison, so I have you staying there. But then the rest of you will need to be reassigned. So if you all want to take a look, and I'll put it in the chat to just the panelists.
Candace, is there, for some reason, I don't see the CRC folder. It's a Google Drive folder.
Yep, it's a Citizen Review Committee public folder. Like, check in your shared with me, because I would have shared it like a while ago.
Yeah, that's what I was just looking in, and I don't see it. I don't know if it's possible to add me again to it. I see a bunch of individual documents that have been shared, but not the actual folder.
Okay, I re-shared it with you.
Okay, great, thank you.
So yeah, can we just real quick, if people wanna take a moment to think about if there's a commissioner, Mangus Maps, Carmen Rubio, who am I missing? Mangus Maps, Carmen Rubio, Hardesty, Dan Ryan is the other one, yeah. So initial people that wanna link up with one of those, yeah.
I'd be happy to meet with Mangus Maps.
I do want to ask a question though about, because I know Commissioner Hardesty's policy person is coming to meet with us. I know we've sent some emails to try to connect with their office and we never actually heard back. So curious to know how you were able to make contact to have her policy person come since we didn't get any communication back about a meeting.
Were you emailing Derek directly for that, for the meeting?
No, I emailed her scheduler.
Oh, and then they just never got back to you is what you're saying?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Honestly, I don't know. I think like the scheduler makes the most sense. I could figure out how to, like, maybe we could send another. Here's what we'll do. I sent an email back like earlier this year that was like, hey, all commissioners, here are the people that are assigned to you, da da da, so that they had, and especially since there's new folks. So how about, once we get everybody reassigned, I'll send that email again to all the new
people. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else? So Sylvan, Andy, Jihan. We need people to do Ryan, I guess Rubio, Ryan, and Maps. And obviously there's less of us, so one person will maybe only have one liaison for now.
I can work with Dan Ryan.
Okay. So we need, definitely need someone for Rubio, and then, go ahead.
I can be
reassigned for
Rubio.
Sorry, there were two people speaking now, I didn't hear you.
Go ahead, Julie.
Oh, no, go ahead. I had a different sort of question.
I was saying, I think there's three of us assigned to Commissioner Hardesty's office. I can be assigned to Commissioner Rubio's office.
There's two of you, because one person left. Correct. I'm happy to move you if you want to move.
No problem.
Okay, so you want to go to Rubio?
Sure.
Okay. And Jihan, what were you saying?
I was saying I'm happy to meet with Commissioner Rubio, but I really don't mind. I can meet with anybody.
Okay. All right, well, how about I just put you on with Commissioner Rubio then? And then Sylvan.
I can meet with Commissioner Ryan as well.
Okay. So now we have Wheeler is going to be Candace and Vadim. Maps is going to be Julie, Ryan, Sylvan and Andy, Rubio, Jihan and Shayna, and Taylor is Hardesty. Sound good to everybody?
You can keep me in Hardesty since Jihan's with Rubio. That's fine.
Okay. Cool. I'll move you back to
Candace. Who are Sylvan and who else for Dan Ryan with me?
Andy. Andy and Sylvan. Sorry.
Oh, just the two of us. Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking in terms of, you know, our elected officials, I was just wondering about the city auditor and whether she was, if there had been some progress in terms of meeting with her.
No, I'm just being honest. No, I there hasn't been much effort on my part. I can change that for sure. There's just been a lot going on. Mm-hmm. But is that something you think we should do a liaisonship then to the auditor? Is that what you're saying too?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think it's important, and I was wondering if there had been any changes in, yeah.
No changes, it's on me.
Is it set up only for you to have, is it like in the bylaws that only the chair can meet with the auditor, or?
No, and I was actually thinking like, maybe, I mean, if you know, I'd be happy to try to meet with her if someone other than the chair or vice chair wanted to reach out. I don't know. Ross or Irene, do you have any insight into her, whether she would be willing to meet with CRC members again?
I actually don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you could ask. You can always talk to us about anything, or yeah, you can ask her if you want. It can't hurt. Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody that, huh?
Nothing, never mind.
Is there anybody that feels strongly about wanting to be the auditor's liaison? I mean, obviously, Julie, you're offering it up.
Julie, is it okay if I join you for that?
I would, if there's anything to join, I don't care who joins. That would be wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Let's touch base, the three of us, about that. And we can, you know, figure out a strategy for how to approach it. That okay. Sound good?
Sure.
So I'll just put on the side here. We'll figure this out.
I know that that's been an ongoing issue, and it just seems like, oh, we're putting all this effort into meeting with our commissioners, and yet we should continue to put some effort into the person who oversees our body.
Definitely. Okay. That sounds good. So I was in the middle of putting on my to-do list. Hold on. Send email to all commissioners. Okay. I will work on getting that out. That was it for my report. Any final questions on my report?
I was just wondering if there was any indication of timeline for the 911 sort of audits. And if you know who was doing that.
I don't have any more details than what I said, unfortunately, but I will keep up with that and can follow up with it. Okay, cool. Moving on, now we will get into this new business. So this document here, I'll post it in the chat. These are the questions that I have started. So I'm posting in the chat so everybody can open it, but I can share my screen too if that's what people prefer. But I wanted us to just take this time to get our general brainstorming down because we had Derek come last time. When I talked with him about coming for today, he wasn't gonna have what he needed to inform us or to give us, you know, an update by today. So he said, I can come in January, but now we have the appeal in January. So I got to figure out what we're going to do as far as when would be next time. I was also going to ask Ross and Irene, do we have an appeal scheduled for February already?
I think we're going to have a conference hearing with the chief on that failed to take a stolen car report from quite a while back. That was the one where the complainant, the appellant, came to the hearing and brought in some additional material that they didn't have when they met with the police officer. And so internal affairs felt like they needed to do another investigation around that. And so instead of doing a whole appeal again, which I don't think would really be productive, I think we're just going to go right to that conference hearing. So I think that will be in January. And then we do have one more appeal coming that we just got, I think, a couple of days ago. I don't know, everything's blurring together, but it was either earlier this week or late last week. And that, we didn't have time to put it on for this meeting, obviously. So that one could be done in February, or if you, you know, if you're going to meet with Derek Bradley again, I don't know. We should probably just check in and discuss all this stuff and figure out how we want to make it happen. And
okay. Candace, I got to take off here in a sec, but I wanted to just offer this up. We can have Bradley present at the policy work group meeting instead. That's still open to the public, and then anybody that wants to attend can attend that separately. And, you know, it might be a good place for that sort of work to, you know, engender as well. And we really need some people on the policy work group helping out. So that might be one of the reasons to bring people together as well. So I'm just throwing that out.
When is that next meeting, Vadim?
Yeah.
There is no next meeting, but come January, because policy and outreach has kind of stalled for a little bit for various reasons. But in January, it'll be reconstituted, as well as the outreach with all the new commissioners, I think.
Go ahead and maybe map out the next at least 6 months? Because I think having it on means that I can definitely commit to the subgroup meeting times.
Is it still third Wednesdays though?
No, it'll have to change with that. I'll email everybody on the committee and see what's still a good time.
So yeah, as of right now, it's on that committee. It's me, Vadim, Julie, and Shayna, just FYI. That's the updated list of who's on that committee.
Actually, it still might be good. We'll see. That's right after your committee meeting, right? The 5:30 is yours, and then 6:30 is ours or something.
We're actually moving ours. So we're going to be moving ours to the second week. And so that's also, you should check in with Irene, because we're moving it because Irene can't staff us on the third Wednesday. So I'm assuming, Irene, you would want us to not do policy that day too?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
I'm okay with meetings back to back on the second.
We'll figure it out. And
we do a polling of availability, because I think everybody's time is a little different than probably what it was when we first established that meeting date. Can I make that recommendation?
I think that's a good recommendation.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I gotta take off. It was good seeing everybody. I'll catch up on what transpired a little bit later. Take care.
Bye, buddy. Okay.
Bye. Julie, were you gonna ask something?
I was just generally going to ask if people were available earlier in the day, but we'll figure that out via poll.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm down for like a lunch meeting, but I can't, you know, always secure that time, because I obviously got to prioritize my day job, but we could shoot for a 12 to noon lunch meeting one day. Okay. And then, yeah, for the crowd control, I sent out the poll. If you haven't filled out the poll yet, please do. But so far, everybody that's filled it out said they can do both the second or the fourth Wednesday. And I think I'm going to move it to the second Wednesday. But we're going to be meeting next Wednesday because so it doesn't get in bump up to the holiday by doing it the fourth in December. Cool. And just set a new meeting time for what?
How did you send out the poll for that, Candace?
For the crowd control work group?
Yeah.
I just did like a Google form poll, just a quick thing.
So in the chat, one of our attendees was saying, asking about availability. So were you able to send it to folks who are also regular attendees or just CRC members when you did the poll?
Well, that poll went to everybody that's on the crowd control.
Okay, so we can do that for the policy and outreach too, for polling a meeting.
No, I mean, we would need to create a different one, because that one specifically, like, it's like a Google form that's like.
That's what I'm saying. We could set the template is there to create.
Sure,
yeah, yeah, sure. So based on what we were just saying with Vadim, why don't we set something like that up when we do our poll so we can send it out to everyone as well?
Okay, that's fine. I'll talk to Vadim about that. He was
volunteering you to do that.
I would highly encourage, if you want to step up to be his co-chair. He doesn't want to be a chair by himself. Adam was his co-chair and left, so I know he needs some support. He hasn't been able to get the meetings back up because he's got a lot going on, apparently. So, yeah, we need more people willing to step up to make that meeting happen, is what I'm saying. And there's a lot of people that are signed up to be on that work group, like community members, back when a bunch of people signed up in, you know, the summer. because we've got like 20 people on the crowd control work group now. And the policy one, I keep getting people applying to join it. So I definitely want to see it get back up because they're asking me what's going on because there hasn't been a meeting and no communication.
I'd be happy to assist with that. I was just under the impression when it got canceled, it was just done. So that was the communication I received, and I'm one of the newest people here. So, but yeah, if you want to let me know kind of offline how to get that rolling, that would be great.
Okay, sounds good. All right. So I think we're back now to transition planning. So somebody had asked what was the timeline. So what Derek explained to me, you know, they're working on getting like the mission statement done, working on figuring out the logistics for getting the commissioners, appointing the commissioners that are going to take on that next phase, which is going to be all the city code stuff. So that's why, you know, he couldn't come in December because he wasn't going to have that clear timeline by our meeting today, but he said he could come in February and that would be the best time. So that's also, let's, you know, Ross, Irene, let's check in on the schedule. I was under the impression that the January appeal was the one that's for the first protest case, but then February, it sounds like we want to have the conference hearing, but I heard you say him backwards. So just wanted to double check.
Yeah, I think we just need to get that stolen car report one done. It's been hanging around for a long time, and I'd like to get that one knocked out.
Okay.
Soon. Okay. And I think we've got the chief, you know, a lot of this has to do with just getting people scheduled too, because we've got the chief reserved for that day, and he's impossible to schedule, and he's got to come to this thing. And so in the interest of getting it, you know, just kind of getting it over with, it's taken a lot of bugging to get the paperwork we need, get all this stuff done. So I would like to just knock it out if possible.
Okay. So then we'll move that protest case to February. And I'm assuming, are those the only two things in the pipeline right now?
Yeah, those are the only ones we've got. We haven't got any other appeals yet. I anticipate we will. I mean, we're going to have a lot more stuff going through PRB, and we just have a lot more cases. So I would think at some point we'll start to see more appeals filter through, but you know, it just seems like more volume you'll have more opportunity for them. So more would happen, but I guess we'll see.
By the way, I tried to sign up for the PRB on the 16th because I could finally make it happen and then they canceled it. But in the process, Christopher Paye mentioned that with the reviewing the file that they're doing like a Zoom call, like we would get on a Zoom call and he would share his screen with the file and I would have to like tell him to flip the page or whatever, but that's how they're doing it now, apparently.
Are you serious? I haven't actually heard that. That's insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what he told me, so.
I talked to him about it too, because I was trying, I'm not even sure whether we're still in conversation about the 9th or not, but I was asking follow-up questions like, do we have to do it consecutively? Because I'm not sure that I can do like a 3-hour chunk. I might be able to do like 1, 2, and 3 for the review. And then also I wasn't sure what the hours were.
I asked those questions and he told me, so no, it doesn't have to be consecutively. Like him and I had scheduled for 2 2-hour blocks on different days.
Yeah.
What was the second question you said?
And what hours he was available to do it.
And it's mostly the 9 to 5, but he did say he could get extra permission for 5 to 7, but that's it. Yeah. It's still tough. It's easier now that we're all Zooming from home, and that's why I wanted to take advantage of it since I can make it work
But you can see the effort. Like he's like trying so hard. Like I will sit there with you and turn the page for you. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'll be able to make the 9th work then.
There are also other ways this could be done that don't require that. And we've gone around and around on this for years. This is a problem that's, like we talked about last time, this predates like Dana and I being at IPR, and there are other solutions to this, I think. I can't even imagine how difficult it would be to read a long, long, long document with someone turning the pages for you on screen sharing. That's
the pressure. Like I get in my zen mode. Like I gotta be like, okay, you know, looking through everything, but that would really stress me out. But I was gonna do it.
Is there not a way to like scan it? Is that one of the things that might have been recommended, Ross, or what are some alternatives?
There have been a million things suggested. It's all about security. It's all about control over the file. So I'll follow up on that. I hadn't heard that idea. Wow.
Okay. And I just wanted to add that this is something we've talked about having remote access for about 4 years now.
Yeah, definitely been a constant battle, and it feels like such a small thing, and yet there's just, yeah, lots of barriers.
I mean, the fact that I was so excited that even that was a possibility says a lot.
I know.
It is absurd, Ross, I agree. It is crazy.
Totally.
My question is also once, you know, with so many agencies, government agencies in particular, going online, you know, courts are going online. There's so many things that we've been told could never, you know, you could never have remote access, work remotely because of security access issues. And now it's clearly happening. So once we do get vaccines, my question is, you know, with some of the remote access ways that we're doing business now, is this an opportunity to continue doing it in this way? You know, so even though we could potentially start being in person, are we open to the idea of keeping this open as a means of connecting as we move forward?
I mean, I would be down with like, probably the main CRC meetings would need to be more like in person, because that just makes it a lot better for the appellant. But if it's a non-appeal meeting, I would be down to have virtually, and I'd be down to keep the work groups virtually, because I feel more productive, honestly, virtually. You got the doc open, I'd be down for that.
It would be great if you could have the option, because I think, I mean, just so everybody can alternate for their own personal environment, like my house could be a little chaotic, so it's actually easier if I'm in a separate place. So maybe it could be a hybrid that people, where if they wouldn't be able to participate, if they were able, like if had it like shut downtown or whatever, they could do it remotely, and then we could have some sort of option to do a combination.
Yeah. I think also just from an accessibility standpoint, you know, especially with the CRC making it accessible for folks who are in communities that don't typically get to participate, you know, maybe Wi-Fi is more accessible now versus having to come across, you know, the county on public transportation to make a meeting and, you know, house sitting and dog sitting and kids sitting and dinner and, you know, that all those finances tend to add up on a person. So I would say, you know, I know there's some folks here in our attendee list who are going to be part of making recommendations. So I think just, you know, however we can keep it as inclusive as possible, that would be great.
Yeah.
And regarding the access to PRB docs, Mr. Handelman made a comment that he believed they used to drop off CDs or DVDs to CRC members who were participating in PRBs. He doesn't know if that was just the CRC case files or if that was PRBs also, but I don't know if there's anybody here that has.
I remember those days.
Do you?
I think what happened was that like they got copied or they got lost or there was some sort of security issue. And so that's when they stopped dropping off the CDs and we had to go through the portal.
Well, and Vadim was, like, earlier this year, what was it that he, like, got the binder delivered to him, I think? So they did something like that this year because of COVID. But, yeah, I don't know.
I think someone sat outside and waited while he read it.
Wait, what?
I think someone waited outside for him to read it. Isn't that right, Ross?
Oh, really? I don't know.
Did I remember hearing
something? Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, I thought he took it home with him, so he didn't actually...
Well, I think it was.
Yeah, no, that's the whole thing is they won't let you take it home for the PRBs, and I think that the CD thing was just for CRC stuff. I don't think it was for PRB stuff. So,
yeah,
it's been a long ongoing problem.
Yeah, that's correct. It was only for the CRC file, not the PRB ever on the CD.
Drama. Well, we'll keep plugging away and trying to figure it out, but yeah. I know everybody's working on it, so it's like being worked on, but it's like a hamster wheel, but I don't know. We'll see. Okay, let's transition here. I want to get to this part. This is going to be our brainstorm. And as you can see, the questions that I've outlined so far are, what are our priorities for this transition process? What do we need from IPR to assist in the transition? How do we want to engage in the work? And what do we feel are the important next steps? So that's kind of that was just me like trying to build a frame for it. It's obviously very open-ended, but I just wanted to have a discussion so that I can communicate this back also, if necessary, to Derek when he contacts me about whatever he thinks that we need to be doing. So I want to be the bridge between that. Or help us be the bridge. So let's just start with big picture. What are our priorities for this process? Like, what do we think we should be doing? How can we support the work, et cetera? And I'm going to take notes. But not everybody at once, one at a time. Just one at a time.
Are we taking feedback from our attendees as well?
We can, if you all want me to. Do you want me to open it up so that people can do that?
I think that would be great.
Well, how about we go through each question and give us a chance to process it a little bit, and then we can open it up and have people respond. Does that sound good? Okay.
Well, I don't know if this is a priority for the transition as much as just a priority for what's created. I guess that's a different question. But
okay. All the notes are going to blend in anyway. Just go wherever you feel.
Well, I mean, I think that, when there, the CRC is, a problematic institution in many ways. And we all know that it could be strengthened, but it has been around for a long time. And I think that is a strength of it. And so in terms of, a new body being created, two things are related to that. One is, just transfer of institutional knowledge, because there's, over a decade of it. And two, really wanting to make sure that new body has the building blocks such that it will also be a body that will have a lot of staying power, because it seems like the city creates these little bodies and then they sometimes don't stay around. And so how can we support creating a body that's really strong and can be around for a long time? It's not going to be perfect from the beginning, but we can help it, evolve and grow.
I also think in terms of the transitioning, I'm one of the newer members to this body, and I think I'm a pretty smart person, but I've been completely overwhelmed by how to just access information quickly about this process. There's been a lot of training, a lot of time and information. A lot of it is in paper form, which, doesn't always mean it's accessible. So making sure that if things can be put online, process and procedures, roles, kind of the breakdown of how everything works, in a very clear way on a website. I think right now the websites are very confusing. and so just having it very easy, click this button to get this, click that button to get that, and not too wordy, but, it can take you to some details and some PDFs, but I think just the more simplistic, really putting it at a level of somebody who does not use websites and is completely unfamiliar with this process, I think that would make it more accessible to more people. And also working with community partners to be able to offer trainings. I guess that would be part of the outreach and policy piece, but it would be great to have more community partners getting involved, inviting them into this process to make it more accessible so more folks throughout Portland are aware of this body.
I don't know if this fits necessarily cleanly into the category of transition, but, and it's been said, I think, a few times before, but I really, really think if we, at like whatever, whenever the new board comes into existence, that we like continue to take these appeals and like do the best process of justice we can give these appellants. And I think even as that goes over the next couple years, if we keep like a running list of what we think works about the process, what doesn't work about the process, like for instance, like the standard of review, and just try to be kind of like a running example of like, we're going to continue, even though it's a small point of access to justice for police accountability, like we could still kind of be that role. And I just definitely fully believe in keeping that as strong as possible until the end, because I think as that time, as the time approaches when that new board's going to start, I think the CRC will probably be, get a little bit more attention. It's kind of like, what's going on? How have they done that? Like maybe it's too far out right now, but I guess, I don't know. I know it's probably been mentioned before, but I think a running list of just like, even as it happens, like even after an appeal where it's like, oh, wait, I wish we could have been able to pull the officer in to like ask him questions about this, or, you know, like for me, I sometimes I wish the reports, like the documents we get for the appeals were in a different format. Just little stuff like that. Like maybe we can all try and just like keep side notes and compile it into a giant messy Google Doc of just ideas. I don't know. It's kind of just something, but I think, I guess my main point is just, I really do think like, I see it more as like we're passing the baton to the next board, right? And maybe they're going to be like in that metaphor, the finisher, maybe that next board will be the like true accountability board. And I think we can try to give them the best shot we can by doing our job, right? And,
Follow up, I do think Julie was right in that we had, it's very important to keep the institutional knowledge and keep what was good about our system and functioning and keep some of that momentum. At the same time, I would hope that one of the priorities would be to take a look at some of the other police accountability boards that are in existence and try not to reinvent the wheel and try to borrow ideas that would make ours better, and see if we can incorporate that. Like the Oakland Police Accountability Board, they have an app where people can file a complaint from their phone. Like, that's a pretty cool idea. Like, maybe just some way that, and maybe it's something that at the CRC we can do, where say, here's a collection of the things from our experience that we want to move forward, that we want to continue. Here are the problem areas that we want to solve, and here are some ways that other communities and cities have solved them, and just take inspiration from what other people have done before us, because I think there's been some good work in this area, and I think there's a lot of focus on it now, which is great. So I think the combination, like Taylor said, I think there's going to be a lot of focus on CRC because of our, you know, the ballot initiative and the change, but I also think just because of the current politics and the current focus on police, both police behavior and holding police accountable for what they do, I think there's going to be a lot of public discussion, not just in Portland, and I think we should take advantage of that.
I don't think we should assume, though, that there will be a lot of focus on this body, because I think I sort of am concerned that like it will be more overlooked than get attention. So I mean, I think maybe there's sort of an open question of like, do we need to advocate for you know, more examination, or you know, just looking at this body.
And I'll say too that it definitely, from what I gathered in my conversation with the mayor as well, like there's a lot of competing interests. And while obviously to us, it feels like the most important thing and to the communities we engage with, I do think it's going to require some push from us, from the community to actually make sure that City Hall implements it and, you know, follows through. I don't know to what extent, that's what I'm still trying to figure out. But I agree that there's going to be a lot of lulling happening. And it seems like Commissioner Hardesty's office is taking the main lead on this. Like it doesn't, because I've been asking the mayor's office, because again, he is the police commissioner, what exactly his role is on that. And I feel like he's been deferring a lot of it to Hardesty. So I'm trying to understand the dynamics there, especially because again, you know, he's the commissioner, she sponsored, you know, and pushed for the bill. And they're working on like that next steps plan. And I don't know to what extent there's a lot, honestly, I just don't know yet. But to what extent that they're planning to engage the community in this process. And part of it is that I think they want to get the first step of getting the commissioners, because it seems a lot of what's going to happen is going to be guided by these new commissioners. That's the general understanding I'm getting right now. So then I'm wondering like, okay, do they make the commit, have this, you know, get the commissioners, and then they do the community outreach and they're working on the code and they're working on doing research. Obviously they would need to work with us to get those best practices, right? So I'm curious what you all think as far as in these next couple of months, and we can definitely check in with, you know, Derek and Hardesty's office about this, but what do you think our role is in the community involvement of this conversation as the CRC, as the outgoing board? Should we be having more of those conversations with the community or sponsoring kind of those conversations? And can those conversations happen in conjunction with our other partners that we've been working with, like TAC and PSEP? I'm curious what you think about that.
Is it still the case that IPR is not interfacing with commissioners on this issue?
From what I heard from the mayor's office, yes, that was his understanding. And then obviously we had the conversation and all that last time, but I don't know the latest.
Because that seems complicated too.
I think it could be subject matter experts if people want to ask questions, but we can't build the new thing when other employees of the auditor's office are going to be reviewing the new thing at some point.
So you can consult, but you can't.
I think we can answer questions about how things work now. Yeah, I think we can do that. And that's what we've always been open to doing that and able to do that. Nobody's ever asked us any of that stuff.
Oh, okay. That's not what the news reports are saying. And that's not how it was represented at the last meeting, but that's good to know.
Yeah, you can't always believe all that stuff.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Are there any current polling or surveys that are being done to kind of gauge community interest or wishes in terms of what they want this new body? I mean, obviously the vote was overwhelming, and the I feel like what a lot of what I'm hearing now in social media is, you know, kind of with the election subsiding, I think both locally and nationally, there's not a lot of conversation still happening around police reform. And so I don't think that's true. I think people are still having the conversations that they were having before the elections. I think people don't necessarily know where to go to file their complaints or their grievances. And so I don't know if that ends up being more of a policy outreach subcommittee kind of thing, but I'm wondering if there's a way, you know, I'm on that subcommittee, you know, I'd be happy to reach out to organizations and see if they'd like to sponsor like a CRC interest talk with their various communities to see what is the interest or questions that people have. Because I think in some instances, a lot of folks in Portland don't even know this body exists. And then people who do know that it exists or have interfaced with it don't necessarily have a lot of confidence in it. So And then now we have this new, you know, legislation bill, what have you, taking place, and not really understanding, you know, I see people talking all the time about this reform, and it, one thing is not necessarily directly connected to another. And so I think people are a little all over the place in terms of how they understand these things work. So just, I think being able to definitely hone down in ourselves, what's happening in this new body, what's being proposed, I can't really say I'm fully aware. So it'd be good for us to know, to then go and engage in some conversations.
Yeah, I was a little confused about, like, it seemed like, so there's a mission statement being created, but I'm not, it wasn't exactly clear who's participating in the creation of the mission statement.
And honestly, not super clear on that either. So that's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, it's just been like a, I think part of it is that the measure was a frame and it was intended to just set, you know, a standard in the charter that couldn't be moved easily by the whims of the political, like, you know, the people that get elected, right? Because they could have changed code and done all of that already, but putting it to the voters just made it the, how you implement it differently. But ultimately, all the code is what's going to need to be, like, that's the work that's going to come next. And I don't, you know, as far as like the community engagement, I mean, part of it, that's what I'm also trying to figure out, because I'm assuming that if they're going to go the route of starting with commissioners and then having them do the work, then they would take the lead on like that community engagement, right? And also just Commissioner Hardesty's office is, I'm assuming, taking the lead on that community engagement. I just don't know the plan yet. But I wanted to gauge to what you all thought, like, it, because I think the policy and outreach group absolutely could just, you know, discuss it, you know, bring, if you want to create a community survey, or if you want to, you know, bring in a panelist, like Vadim was saying, like, bring in Derek and talk about it there. I feel like that could be a good place to do that work. I just don't know exactly what you need to do just yet.
And I think for the majority of the new commissioners, their policy folks are going to be learning their positions brand new. So I think maybe even inviting them to come be part of this discussion when Derek is here, because then maybe those are the folks we should be following up with, not the actual commissioners, but their policy people specifically.
Right. And one thing that I heard a little earlier, and I wrote it down, just wanted to bring up, that I feel like a start, stop, keep chart would be really good for this, like start doing, stop doing, keep doing, like that. I use that a lot in other organizations. I think it's just a good way to frame it so that we can just have a bigger brainstorm of, you know, what do we like about the CRC? It's public, you know, there's a couple of things that are like really obvious, like, yes, you have to make sure that transition's over. You know, what do we wish we had? So the start category, what do we wish we didn't have? The stop category. So maybe we could go that route. And for me too, I'm kind of just, it's frustrating for me because like, I'm the kind of person, I'm like, okay, we're going to do it. Like we need a plan, we need a schedule, and I don't know it. So I'm like, I feel like I'm just like, I'm trying to guide us through this conversation, but there's so many unknowns, so it's hard to frame it right. But I'm hoping we can just kind of get all of our feelings and emotions and thoughts out today so that I can start to figure out how to communicate that back and make sure that we're receiving what we need to be effective in this process.
Candace, you've had a chance to connect with some of the other groups and you're also in community as a community advocate and activist. What are some of the things that you're hearing from folks?
I mean, obviously, like, I was part of the measure, and so I, you know, advocated for it. We went and did that work to just get the community support for it, and ultimately, people are like, we just want it to change, right? Like, it's not like people really understand the details of how CRC works and everything. They just see the outcomes that they don't like, which is that they feel like there's no, you know, in the simplest of terms, no justice. And so I think that's also why I was saying earlier, like, I really think there's going to need to be like an effort to say, okay, everybody that was really, you know, eager and they voted for it and they're excited about it. Like, you have to stay connected because you're going to, there's going to still need to be public pressure to make sure it's implemented well. So I think there's, that's the phase that we're in where like people are like, we're excited that we passed this thing and now what, right? So, but I think ultimately the thread that's consistent is just wanting more accountability, you know, pretty straightforward. But of course, we have to be in the details of it. And I don't think the public is, I wouldn't say they're not interested in it, but it's a lot to take in and trying to figure out how to engage them in ways that feels tangible, you know?
I think there's a lot of questions about, you know, what the vote, the ballot measure decided and what is still up for question. Because there was a lot of specificity in the ballot measure. At the same time, there was a lot of there's a lot of, you know, parties that, you know, object to, you know, legality of components of it and things like that. So I think there's a lot of confusion about what can happen also.
I think that's a really good point. That's been something that's stymieing me a little bit in this conversation. And also just as I've sort of thought about preparing for the transition to the new system generally, I don't know if this is, you know, CRC's role, if it even should be, but if it even could be, I'm not sure if we're allowed to do this kind of thing, but like, you know, I'm very interested in the process of making sure that what ultimately happens comports with all the relevant laws, and if that means changing the relevant laws so that the system can be initially put in a way that that meets the intent behind it, so be it. But like, is CRC, we're not allowed to lobby like in our capacity as CRC members, right? Like if there were something coming up before the state legislature involving, you know, a change that might be relevant or helpful for letting the implementation of the new system go through in a certain way. Like, we probably can't weigh in on that. I'm guessing there's a rule.
I don't think as a CRC we could, okay. No. But as individuals, I mean, I definitely plan to as an individual. And there is, like, part of all the coordination that's happening too is that coordinating it with the state laws. So I know Senator Lou Frederick's office is working on legislation that would help in the implementation of this, you know. And then also there's the police contract coming up, which, you know, the contract, this is also,
yeah,
you know, the contract, there's a lot of things in it that affect what we do. But obviously it's sensitive, right? It's a union contract and we can't, you know, there's lots and lots of rules around it. And, you know, the last time the contract was going on, I wasn't on the CRC. So I don't know what was happening as far as the CRC in relationship with the contract. And I don't, maybe Irene, if you had any context on that, if you were, you know, I don't know.
I think a CRC engaged in some, and I don't even remember if it was as public as it is right now. Because this last, in the spring, they had a bunch of different public sessions, and I can't remember if in the last one they had those.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's anything with that coming up as well. I mean, I would assume no, but.
I'm going to get some clarification too in terms of, so when we talk about advocating or discussing, so for a couple of reasons. One, in terms of kind of what are those parameters, because, so like for instance, I work for Boley, but I don't represent Boley here, but it was mentioned tonight. So I do feel like I have to disclose I am not here on behalf of them. Anything I say or do is not on behalf of that work. But sometimes that still crosses over. And I think some of the concern also that needs to be made aware is that this work can be dangerous. You know, not everybody agrees with this work. We live in environments where people have access to information that can get out. And that's on an all-time rise. And so I don't want to put anybody's business out in the streets, but this is happening to people doing this work. And so I would say that that also needs to be addressed in terms of how we show up as volunteers and citizens, making our time accessible, but also making sure that there are mechanisms in place to ensure our safety and, you know, repercussions. You know, if you're a federal employee, be it, you know, post service person or working in government in some other capacity, if somebody harms you or threatens you, there's legal criminal repercussions for that. And so I think that's something that also needs to be made clear that, you know, as we continue to diversify this body and any other kind of body, these issues are polarized. And so I know we all have our own opinions, but the reality is we're out here doing certain types of work and people can kind of discern what side of it we're on. And so I think that that does, I don't think it's something that I've heard discussed, but I think it's a reality. I know when I was hired as an investigator, I was told be careful because sometimes investigators are threatened. And so I would say that's also very clear to people who do volunteer work, especially when bodies are taking up certain issues of importance. So I think Mr. Handelman said something about, I can speak to this question about the contract in the chat.
Yeah. Are folks okay with us hearing from Mr. Handelman on this? Okay. So let me get that going. Mr. Handelman, I'm going to, I guess I'll use your phone, right? Are you calling user? Is this you?
Yes, thank you. This is Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. So the last time the contract was renewed, it was 2016, and Mayor Hales decided that the previous two times when there had been some public meetings where the public was allowed to observe, were never allowed to talk, but allowed to observe the negotiations, was just a bunch of political theater. And so rather than discuss this with the community, he negotiated the contract behind closed doors, which led to a lot of consternation, and then people got very upset at the content of the contract. And it ends up with the police pushing people out of City Hall after the contract was approved, and violence by the police against the protesters. So there has been a history of the community being involved in observing the negotiations. What happened in 2019 and early 2020, or actually it was just early 2020, when they started negotiating the contract before COVID, they had a couple of meetings in public, and then they had one meeting at the PPA headquarters, which was not open to the public, and then they shut everything down and extended the contract for a year. So we're not sure, given it's still not clear when people are going to be meeting in public again, how these negotiations are going to start again. But the resolution, the City Council ordinance actually that passed in July that extended the contract for a year, sets January 13 as the next date for them to start negotiating at the latest. I don't know if that's going to be changed, but that's what the current law says. And as was mentioned by somebody, the contract currently says that the IPR, it doesn't mention the CRC particularly, but it says the IPR has no authority to investigate deadly force cases. And it implies that when an officer is being investigated for misconduct, that it has to be done by an officer, which is why IPR has to get internal affairs to compel officer testimony right now. The standard of review has never been written in the contract. It was made through some kind of deal off record that's not in the contract between the PPA and the city, and that's something you're going to have to tackle for the new board or along with the people forming the new board.
I have a question for Mr. Handelman. Based on, this is Shayna Pomerantz, I don't know if you can see us, but in one of the reviews that we were appeals, we had somebody from the city attorney's office present, and so we had some kind of conversations about the standard review and just kind of making sure that everybody was clear on the language. So, to what extent is the city attorney's office able to kind of engage with us? And I don't know if that's an IPR or, you know, so and should we be engaging with them in terms of establishing this new board to make sure that language is clear? I know we have a lot of attorneys on this body here, but the reality is most folks aren't legally trained when they come in to do an appeal. So any thoughts about that, engaging the city attorney's office in this process?
Are you talking about the transition process, or are you talking about when you're hearing appeals still as the CRC while the new body's being formed?
Both. I mean, definitely with the transition, but I think it was clear to me, you know, from my first appeal that I sat in on, that not everybody was on the same page. And so we were often asking the representative from the city attorney's office to clarify. And so it was clear even from the police bureau's end that they may not be clear on the standard of review or, you know, kind of what this process entails. So yeah, I mean, considering, I think I've heard projected maybe another 2 years before, you know, the new body actually takes shape. So yeah, I think, you know, getting on the same page so we don't lose 2 years, but also so we have continuity and understanding going into the transition body. What are folks' thoughts about that?
We used to have the city attorney come to every CRC meeting, and that stopped, not by our choice. I don't know whether that was the auditor's choice or the city attorney, like, I don't know who made that decision, but they stopped. But I think that we all expressed while they were there how helpful it was, how good it was for them to be able to answer these questions, and especially about sort of abstract procedural rules that we might not be able to pull out off the top of our heads. And so I think it's incredibly helpful for them to be there, especially for appeals. But I doubt they're going to start doing that on a regular basis. I think that was a one-off because of the complicated nature of that appeal and because of the lawsuits the appellant had filed against the city, and that it was a very complex, convoluted situation that involved legal liability. But I can't see them coming back to our meetings when they decided not to.
That wasn't the auditor's decision. And that was before my time, but my understanding is that was the city attorney's office decision. And we can't obviously make them come to any of this kind of stuff. We asked them to come to the last one because it was so complicated. There were so many cases that interconnect, and you all only got to see a small fraction of it. So we asked them to come to try to help kind of keep things on track. And I don't know if they'd be willing to come again or not.
Is that something you want me to advocate for?
Because I know the I'm going blank on her name, but I know she's the designated attorney for the police bureau, and so and there's several attorneys. In a former life, I law clerked for the city attorney's office, so I know they have a pretty large team, and they're pretty awesome as a team. So I think at the very least, maybe talking to them to find out, even if there's an opportunity that if we had questions that needed some legal clarification, that just knowing we have a pipeline to communicate, just to have that basis.
I'll put it on the agenda to talk about, as well as I'll ask the mayor next time I see him about the police contract.
I just feel like the Citizen Review Committee has been like continually pushed towards irrelevance and like, and sort of isolation, and like during the time that I've been on the committee. And I think some of that's changed in large part due to like Candace and Vadim's working with other groups. So I see that as a really, really promising thing. And I think that's like the only way that we can ensure our relevancy is to work in partnership with other groups. But like, the city attorneys not coming to our meetings anymore is just one example. Like if Portland Cop Watch and the League of Women Voters weren't here every time, like I think I would be like, nobody was watching. And so I think that and I just think that it's important that the information isn't lost, you know. And I said it before, but like I'm trying to say it again in a different way, because I think the risk of like reinventing the wheel, like you talked about, Andy, like is great because there's so much to learn from, you know, from this body and from IPR. And I think that there could be just a lot of time and a lot of like, you know, just so much more efficiency if this body were not that, you know, were part of those discussions. And so I thank Candace for like trying to really ensure that that this body is relevant in those conversations, but I don't think it's going to happen if there's not work to do so.
Yeah, and I definitely feel like there's so much to be learned through the NACL, so the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement. I think that's the acronym. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went to that protest, whatever the title of that was. And just hearing from Seattle and DC's boards, like there were so many things, like you're saying, you know, like I think Andy had said, like somebody had an app, like Seattle has a really cool tracking thing where you can look up your case and see, you know, what's the percentage of it being done. And the DC thing with their assembly observers program. So the frustrating thing for me is just like, one, at the end of the day, this is like a side thing I do. If I could spend like, you know, if I could get paid to do it full time, like I feel like I would have much more time and energy to do more. And I think, you know, I'm trying to figure out what is our capacity as volunteers, that of course we do important work, but we have our limits. And understanding, like, you know, as far as all that labor that's going to need to be done to get all those best practices and make sure we're not reinventing the wheel by doing that good research and all that, like I just don't, right now it feels like the people leading that is Hardesty's office.
So well, that's right, and that's important. Like it's not our job to be doing that. I think the question is just, you know, just advocating for, you know, for a voice. I mean, I don't, does anyone else have my fears? I mean, I put my feelings and emotions right out there. Like I fear that a body will be created that I worry about this very imperfect body being replaced and then collapsing. Like that's my fear. And so that's what I don't want to happen. I want there to be something. Like I've always considered the CRC a placeholder and my place on it a placeholder, and placeholders like have a, you know, are important for different reasons. So, but I just want to make sure that there's something that continues to exist.
I mean, I think change is slow, right? So, you know, I talked to my aunt who's 80, who used to work in the police bureau and was part of the first iteration of this body in conceptualizing it. Mm-hmm. And I talked to her about some of the things that we discuss here, and she's like, huh, I was talking about this when I was your age. That was 40 years ago. So, I mean, the reality is bureaucratic systems move very slowly. And I think as long as we set the intention to make this an inclusive process, I mean, I look at us, we have a lot of education amongst us. We don't have a lot of young people present here. We don't have a lot of color here. And so long as this is what this body continues to look like, we're not doing our best to engage all the folks who are being impacted. And the people who are being impacted don't believe that they can come in this space and be heard. They don't know how to access it. They don't know how to maneuver it. A lot of times they can't get the time to get into it. And then ultimately they feel like, well, do I have the time and mental and emotional capacity to even go through this? Because, you know, it's hard enough being fill in the blank, you know, Black, Brown, Indigenous, poor, whatever. And so now to come and put your face here and speak up and, you know, that takes a lot of courage. And so I think however we can create a space that represents all of our community in a way that feels inclusive and accessible, that I would like to be part of that, you know, and making sure that we continue to move in that direction. So hopefully with the 20 prospective folks who are coming in, they will, you know, over the next 2 years, help to broaden and diversify the current body that we have that will propel us into the next, you know, iteration. But I'm also inspired by the fact that we have a very diverse commissioning body on our city council. And, you know, it's the first time we've had this. So I know they're going to have a huge transition, but I think they all come in knowing that they're going to have to hit the ground running and they have a lot of constituents to ask answer to. So I'm inspired. I'm hopeful for what's coming.
How does that body and the work that they're doing interface with this work? I mean, not interface, but how does that review of the city's charter, how is it relevant to this question in front of us around this new body that's being created?
What's the question? Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, what is the capacity for that body and the changes it proposes to influence how this structure?
You're talking about the Charter Review Commission, I still have a lot to learn about whatever that process is going to look like. We're going to have some training soon, but the measure is a charter change. So if they're like, it's going in the charter. So I'm assuming there's some level that the Charter Review Commission could change things about it and propose changes to it. I don't know to what extent, but my basic assumption is that.
Julie, I think your fears that whatever new thing is created will fail is valid, but I think the fact that the PPA is fighting.
Maybe not quite how I would put it, but yeah, maybe that is how I sounded. Yeah. But go ahead.
Oh, did I? Well, it just, like, you were afraid that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounded like you were worried that whatever new thing took our place would not succeed. Is that not accurate?
I guess that is what I said. But I guess I meant, like, I just want something, I just want there to be something, you know, that, like, if, I just, yeah, I guess that is what I said. but I do know that change is slow. I hope that change is slow, in part because I just want to make sure that, like, there's a bridge, right? That, like if something is created that doesn't quite work, that, like, that there's not a vacuum of nothing. Yeah, I guess that's what I said. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. And I worry about us putting the cart before the horse a little bit because there's a grievance out there, I don't know how, where it's going, about just the ballot measure itself violated the contracts, right? And that it was such a big change to the police over discipline system that it violated the union contract. And I know, I think some of it, the changes that we want to be seeing really do depend on changing state laws about arbitration. Like, you can't change police disciplinary procedures in a way that we think it'll be effective without the arbitration system is a huge problem. And so I'm just really interested to see what happens, like what changes we'll be able to affect when so much of it is dependent on what happens in Salem or what happens with this grievance or, you know, what happens. So, you know, that's my concern. As you said, you were open and honest about your fears. That's my fear. I fear like that the necessary structural changes in the law won't happen, or that will, like you said, it will happen so slowly that we will lose momentum. And then, like the way I see it, the arbitration problem is one of the biggest hurdles to police accountability that we have. And without a change to that, I don't know if anything that we do would be really significant.
Well, so I'm curious to know, like, IPR's sense of, like, if it takes, I mean, so the ballot measure didn't abolish IPR, right? It rather created something new, right? Like it, like what's the, I don't know the technical process by which, you know, IPR or the CRC is dismantled, right? So, and so I don't understand, like if something can't be created, does IPR just continue to exist until something else is created? Like, how does that work? Roth, I mean, Director Caldwell, do you understand that?
No, I mean, I don't think a lot of that stuff has really been thought through. I think, you know, IPR is completely a creature of city code. So there's nothing in the charter about IPR. So if you, you know, wanted to, you know, if this commission comes up with a bunch of city code changes that would create the new body, assume that that's when they would get rid of the stuff that puts IPR there. And that, you know, that could be done without a ballot measure. That's putting something in the charter, which is, you know, the city version of putting it in the Constitution, obviously. So there's nothing in the charter now. So, you know, I don't really know how that'll all work. And I don't know how it'll all work with the, you know, the two unfair labor practices, the grievance out there, the union contract, things that are happening in Salem that have already been mentioned. So I think there's just a lot of stuff up in the air. I don't really know kind of what to make of it.
Well, I mean, aside from the charter revision, like the actual ballot measure doesn't put any sort of...
ballot measure is in the charter. So the code is where a lot of the stuff that we do lives, and they're going to go about the process of changing the code now. That's essentially like... does that make sense? Does that answer what you're asking?
Yes.
I didn't
realize I was asking that, but no, that makes sense. I guess I just, yeah, there's a, it's very complex situation.
It is. And, you know, I think I'll just share like my general thoughts, because obviously I'm very invested in this work. I'm very invested in seeing whatever is next be more, you know, efficient, better, have better outcomes for the people that engage in this process. And, you know, there were a lot of questions. It was a, you know, putting together something in the height of a political moment. That's also politics. And, you know, I feel like there's a lot, like, so much ish has been happening this year. And what, you know, not only this damn pandemic, but then watching George Floyd get murdered and have this complete like outpouring of people's demanding change, like that just created an opportunity that couldn't be missed. You know what I mean? And so there's definitely a lot of things that are flawed in whatever is coming next. I'm gonna do every goddamn thing I can to make sure that it gets implemented, but it's going to take coordination from the state, from whatever's going on in the contract, obviously from the city, to put in the code and make sure it's right. And this is, what do we need to be doing? I mean, ultimately, we still have, like we're saying, we've got appeals coming down. That's going to need to be our main focus. You know, we've got to make sure that what currently exists is still functioning, right? Because that's the only thing people have access to until this new thing is created. And, you know, I'm trying to get a gauge from you all, like, and also not only what you all want to be involved in, but also to what extent we can be involved in this next process, because that's definitely not 100% clear. And, you know, I'm trying to figure that out for us, right? Like, what is it that people need from us? Or what do we want to do in this process? But ultimately, I just think I share those fears, you know, I share those fears too of like, is our people just going to lose interest? Is the public not going to pay attention? And then it can kind of get brushed under the rug. Bureaucracy can be evil. You can use it for evil ways. You know, trust me, I work in bureaucracy, right? So I don't know. I think that those are just my general feelings I just wanted to put out there. But ultimately, there aren't a lot of answers. And I know that's frustrating for us right now. I think we need time, like we need to hear back on who's implementing this next step, and then again what part we play in it.
I wanted to
also bring up, somebody had asked the question in the chat, are crime victims impacted and do they count? And I just want to clarify, because you mentioned George Floyd, Candace, you know, people who come here believe they have been victims of crime at the hands of law enforcement. And so that's what makes this work so necessary. That's what makes the work that IPR does. You know, I'm an investigator. You know, we have a small team that serves the state. You know, they're taking claims in. Ross, how many do you all have? Half a dozen investigators?
We have seven, yeah, now. We have money for eight, but we have seven.
That serves all of Portland. And
anybody who has an interaction with Portland police. Yeah, I mean, it could be any, you could be traveling through, or you could live in Portland, or yeah.
And so it's absurd to think seven people can adequately handle the volume of work and then be responsible for overseeing the appeals process from when a complaint goes through, you know? So having, I mean, I think the reality is we have a good start to something, you know, having it under the auditor's office, an independent body to review the police. You know, I think we're at a point in our society where we understand we have to do policing differently. We have to look at this differently. But our work here is literally limited to evaluating the appeals that come before us and just going to, you know, what do we need from IPR to assist in the transition? It's more like, what can we do to assist IPR to do their work? Because there's just simply not enough resources for them to do what they do at the scale that it needs to be done. I mean, vetting those initial complaints thoroughly, adequately going through talking to witnesses, getting all the information so that it does end up reaching us. That is its own set of issues that I think doesn't really get discussed in the way that it should.
But I was curious what that meant specifically. I wanted to actually follow up on that about what if crime victims would be impacted, because Shane, I agree with you that the people that come before us are victims and they feel like they are victimized, and they feel like they are victimized in a way that they feel like they don't, there's not a lot of recourse if you are the victim of misconduct by a police officer, you know. But I'm just wondering if Ms. Fitzsimmons had other thoughts, like if maybe the work that we do would somehow make the police less responsive. I was hoping that I can flesh that out a little bit. Because if it was a concern about what we're doing, making the police less capable of responding to crime, I would love the opportunity to actually dispel that. I think an accountable police force is actually more efficient and serves the people better. And so if there is concern in the community that these improved accountability measures will somehow mean that we are soft on crime, or that people in the city would be, you know, it'd be anarchy and people in the city would not have police as a recourse, I think that is a valid conversation to have. And so I don't know if there's a way for her to sort of flesh out her concerns more, but I think that's an important conversation to have with the community, because we, I think, are very similarly minded in that there is a failure of police accountability and that there is behavior and actions taken by police officers that are incredibly concerning and that are not sufficiently addressed. But I do think that there might be people in, and I work with a lot of ex-cops in my everyday job. A lot of our investigators are former police, and I hear a very, very different view. And I do think that in the community, there's probably a different view too of what accountability means and what the consequences are. And so I think if we are setting priorities, I think not only communicating to people who agree with us, but also people who are skeptical of what we do is important.
I agree with that. And Ross, you have been wanting to say something, please go.
We've kind of got past it a little bit now, but when we were talking about the concerns about the new thing, I think we don't have, you know, IPR folks, we don't have any control over what the new thing will look like, but our, at least speaking for myself, my immediate concern is that our employees will all leave and go work somewhere else, because there's been a lot of negative things said about IPR recently. A lot of those are not actually true, but have been said loudly and often. And it's already a pretty difficult line of work to be in. And I think that my concern is that our employees are just going to think, you know, why do I want to deal with this uncertainty? You know, they have mortgages, they have kids, they have bills to pay, that they're not just going to want to move on and work somewhere else. And it's really hard to recruit people to work in this that are good at this kind of work, because you really need to be able to come from a neutral place. You can't be too anti-police. You certainly can't be pro-police. You got to come from a neutral spot. And, you know, I don't know who we would be able to recruit in a time when our agency is supposedly going out of business, if it actually gets off the ground. So, you know, my big fear is that if we don't find a way to keep employees, that this whole thing will just grind to a halt at a time when it's a really bad idea to take your eye off the police and off how policing is done in Portland. So just want to mention that. It's just kind of another, there's a ton of things that are up in the air. There's a lot of unknowns and a lot of variables. And that for me is kind of the biggest one, just because that's something that we at least hope to be able to have some kind of control over.
Well, that's a really good, that's a really, really good point. And that it seems like that's another possible way that this work could be eroded, especially if it takes, like in some ways, you kind of hope for things to happen, you know, not at like a bureaucratic glacier pace because you want change to happen, right? But at the same time, you want it to happen deliberately so that it's done constructively and well. But if it takes too long, I mean, you're right. I mean, the IPR staff will be a shell. And that would make the work that this body does, as imperfect as it is, impossible. So that's I think that's a huge danger.
Ms. Avalos, Chair, I just wanted to jump in and say, however this new iteration happens, one thing to keep in mind is that when we look at police oversight systems in other cities that have a population similar to ours, what's really come to mind for me recently is that those cities, for example, Seattle and particularly Denver, have about from 3 to 5 or more people serving in their outreach capacity. And for the last 11 years, I have been doing the work of the outreach coordinator and the recruiter for the CRC and the trainer for the CRC, or the coordinator for the training, the onboarding, and the support. And I think that if we're going to be moving in a new direction, that public piece, that should be, we should have 5 people for public relations too.
Mm-hmm. Completely, completely agree.
Same.
So, go ahead, Julie.
No, I was just agreeing. Yeah, and that's an incredibly good point. Mm-hmm.
I don't know to what extent, so just going back on, we were engaging with an audience member. Is that something we want to bring somebody on to talk to us? Like, I didn't know if there was a decision on what we wanted to do about that comment as we talked about it.
I'm curious to know what she was referring to, if she's still here and would like to participate.
Yeah, she typed in the chat, and I don't know if we want to open it up to public comment and give her the opportunity to follow up. She referenced in the chat the Ferguson effect, which is a supposed uptick in crime after sort of a pullback of policing because police are free to do their jobs, which results in an uptick of crime, is I think the basic of the Ferguson effect. And so I think it would be a combination of less policing and police being afraid of being held accountable for what would otherwise be an acceptable action. So they take fewer actions and it makes the community less safe, I think is the basic gist of the Ferguson effect. And so I don't know if that's something that we want to discuss in this forum because it's been brought up and we can do it through public comment, or whether, you know, there's another way to discuss it or table it and have it be just have a note that say this is a concern that people have and that it should be taken into consideration.
I think it's 7:17. What's our cutoff time?
We don't have one officially. I think here's...
I think that's almost another hour's worth of conversation just waiting to happen.
And I guess it brings me to one question that I've been having throughout this whole conversation, which is, you know, overall, the CRC, we have the autonomy to pursue initiatives and, you know, talk to community. And, you know, we have a lot of autonomy to do that in whatever ways we feel is necessary for our work. You know, obviously the crowd control, when the protests were happening, we did the forum and the surveys and stuff like that. So I guess in addition to all the work that we already have to do, because the other thing that I know we want to make sure we keep sight of is that this is all great, but appeals are a lot of work already. And not only that, but there are other bodies, like I would consider PSAP to really be the body that's like responsible for getting that community feedback, like that bigger picture stuff, when really our job is to hear appeals. And so I think definitely within the policy and outreach work group, we should have a discussion on what we think our role is in the coming months. I am somebody who would prefer to create spaces for people to talk to us. I love to, you know, giving people those opportunities to talk about these nuanced issues. And, you know, police accountability is one tiny piece in the larger system of criminal justice. So, you know, there's so many things that are related, but also we have a small slice that we have to focus on. So I think that's what makes our work hard sometimes. I guess my question is, like, am I hearing that we as a body have some interest in engaging the public in these larger conversations? And it's possible that it could be duplicative. Is that a word? If like other bodies are doing that, you know, work, but do we want to do that work? Do we want to reach out to the community and create those spaces?
I mean, I think that we would want to work in partnership with people that are, but I'm not sure if that's, I'm not sure if that's the best use of our time right now, in the sense that, like, we could be creating a basis of institutional knowledge to pass on, and while community input is really important, like, part of that institutional knowledge is community input we've received over many, many years. So I think it's important, but I'm not sure that that's the most important, the way we can be most effective. I mean, I think one of the ways that we can be most effective right now is really prioritizing our meetings with commissioners and making sure that we understand, you know, what the process is, and that they understand what, you know, what has been the historic role of, you know, civilian oversight in the city.
I just think that we should take it into consideration if we are advocating, if we are meeting with commissioners and advocating for a particular type of board and a particular outcome, that we address and understand community concerns with that type of board. I don't necessarily think that we should take resources to follow that and hold meetings and forums just on that. But I do think that if we are advocating, it is important to address that, because I do think a lot of those concerns are out there. I just think we would be better advocates for a better system if we can understand and hear some of those concerns and have that sort of either say, well, here's why I think that that won't result, or I'll take that into consideration and maybe we could build a better system.
I think one of the things I'd be interested in doing in the policy and outreach, we had talked about this before in terms of reaching out to, in addition to commissioners, some of the legislative offices and organizations, but I think it would be good to see if we can set up an opportunity to be invited into some of these community spaces, and especially since there's Zoom, you know, it makes it a lot more accessible for a lot of folks to come and participate. And I think being invited as opposed to us hosting it means that there's already a community space that has kind of the folks they serve, and they can create the safe space to have the conversations, and we can come and listen and get the feedback, as opposed to, I mean, I think Candace, you've been really effective in creating the work group space for the police force and protests space. But I think just in terms of other conversations, you know, it's, you know, and I think partially it's probably because you're there, you know, and you're visible in community. You ran for office, you're part of PSU, you're young, you're, what do you say, Latina. So, you know, as a Black Latina woman, you know, in community, I think people probably feel a lot more safe, especially folks from marginalized communities of color that will feel more safe coming forward to share. But I think if we create partnerships or opportunities to be invited into spaces that we wouldn't normally get into, one, that might take some stress off Irene in her capacity, but two, it gives us an opportunity to kind of be part of a, you know, be there to actively listen and take that information back and share that with PSEP or invite PSEP to come be with us in those spaces.
Yeah, let's connect Shayna so that we can get that work group up and going again, because I think a lot of this definitely should happen in that space. Mm-hmm. And then, so looking at the time, looking at, you know, what we've accomplished so far, there's one big thing that I don't want to make sure we run out of time to discuss, and that was one of the, what Jihan wanted to talk about regarding the audit work group. So I'm wondering if we could transition into that just so that we can make sure to get to that topic. Does that sound okay, everybody? We'll keep working on this other stuff. We'll keep discussing it in some way, and we'll try to find a way forward. But Jihan, you had brought up around the audit work group and what it does and whether we need it. Obviously, we know now that the audit work group is required per the code, I guess, but wanted to hear your thoughts since you put it on the agenda.
So my understanding is that it's not actually required per se. My understanding is that what's required is that we advise IPR on their operations. And so that the recurring audit work group was created to do that. But if it's not the mechanism that works now to do it, then this is my read of it. And Irene, maybe you want to jump in here if I'm misunderstanding what you sent me.
I see.
Okay,
well, let's see if she's there. Are you there, Irene? Maybe Ross, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah. I don't think it has to be a work group exactly. I think there's a lot of different ways you could do it. And I know that other work groups have added, you know, more non-CRC people to their ranks, which is great. With the kind of the recurring audit work group, that'd be a little more challenging because you do have to, you know, you'd be looking at our files. So there's a lot of just kind of confidentiality concerns there and stuff like that. So that would have to be, I think, limited to just CRC members looking at it. But Jahan, if you want to, I know this has come up a couple of times before, and if you, and I'm not sure, I don't remember off the top of my head who else is on that one, but if you want to set some time, we could kick around some ideas and see if there might be another way that you'd want to approach it.
Right now it's Jihan and Vadim.
Yeah, we can definitely set up some time if you want to just send me an email or I can send you one.
All right, yeah, that would be helpful because I think at this point, you know, we've got a mission statement, but we don't really have a purpose or focus, right? And so, and it's, you know, I'm willing to look at files beyond the appeals and PRBs, time allowing, of course, but I want it to be useful and to serve a purpose, especially given all of these transitions that, you know, are so uncertain. So I just feel like, perhaps at this point it might not be necessary unless we actually, the CRC can identify, and IPR with IPR's help can identify an actual focus for it, then we might need to figure out other ways to provide this advice that we're supposed to be giving to IPR, noting that we probably haven't been doing it for at least 2 years, right? And so what does that look like moving forward, especially with all of the uncertainty? So that was the reason why I wanted to discuss this today.
Yeah, we'll set something up with you and Vadim and we can see what we can come up with and just review the requirements. And I think there's probably lots of different ways you could get there.
Does it make sense for the audit workshop work group also to be the ones responsible for creating the relationship with the auditor?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it like that. I don't know.
I mean, I think historically, you know, the audit committee was working closely with staff, but not necessarily the auditor, more closely with the director and assistant directors. But that doesn't mean they could.
Might be a bridge building opportunity.
Perhaps, and this is something we can also discuss when we meet with Vadim and Ross. I also want to be transparent, is that part of the reason why we're at this point and haven't met since really July or so is that we just don't have capacity, right? So it's either scheduling issues on Vadim's part or on mine. And I, given my workload, I don't see that changing in the future. So I don't want to overcommit that we would also be looking at building more bridges with the auditor's office.
Understandable.
Okay, where are we at? What are we feeling? What do we want to do right now? Go ahead, Julie.
Well, I will need to go myself, but I don't want to, you know.
I think we should just start wrapping up. We've talked about a lot. We got a lot of thoughts out there. I took some good notes. Let me just double check and look at the agenda and make sure there's anything else that we needed to cover. The only other thing was, and I'll just bring this up. We can talk about it more later. We'll go into work group updates. Crowd control, gosh, my words. It's late, I'm tired. Okay, crowd control, use of force work group. We have been meeting, we have been discussing, processing all of our information that we've collected. And at our last meeting, we brought on, hold on. Okay. Cat, you know, gotta be in the other side of the door. Whatever other side of the door, you gotta be on the other one. I know Andy knows this now that she's got kittens. okay, so we had the PSEP and TAC come to our last meeting to start talking about whether we wanted to create some kind of protest 2020 report that collects the information we have, the information PSEP has collected, and TAC, and then compile a report that would end in recommendations based on everything that we learned. So just putting it on your radar, there's nothing, we're still figuring out how to do that, what to do about it. In my meeting that every 2 weeks, Vadim and I also meet with the commissioner's staff and, distracted by a cute baby. We talked with them in the last meeting and just said, hey, you know, as far as the commissioners go, like if there's information that they feel would be valuable in that kind of report, let us know. So we're still trying to figure out how it will be compiled, but just wanted to put it on everyone's radar that we're working on that. Anything else to report, Taylor, Sylvan, you think from our work group?
That's the main one that came to mind for me. It's possible I'm forgetting something major, but that's what I'm aware of.
Cool.
I have a question too, and then I think
Oh, sorry, Sheena.
Go ahead, Taylor. I'll ask after you finish.
Oh, I'm just excited about that report. And I think just to go on what something Candace said earlier in the chat, just talking of capacity, like I'm excited to work on that, but I'm also very cautious with, I don't know, stuff moving forward, how much time we have, but I'm really excited for that. And also it is, I just wanted to kind of say, it's kind of wild watching PPB get slapped with that contempt in that lawsuit. And then also it being part of, like, I swear we heard that from community input at one point about that incident. And so I just, I don't know.
Do you clarify what you're talking about, Taylor?
Yeah, there was just Don't Shoot PDX's lawsuit against PPB. They had a contempt motion against Portland police for Judge Hernandez's order to kind of use less lethal munitions. And then I swear we heard about this in one of our protests, like Candace put on the kind of community forum. And I just wanted to highlight, like, I think that when we talk about community engagement, like, it's crazy we're hearing these stories and you're kind of seeing the effects at the same time in the courts. And so just a kind of crazy time. I mean, I just think it really speaks to the importance of the community engagement. I wish we had a lot more capacity to do a lot more of that kind of stuff. Maybe the future board will. But anyways, that's just what I want to say. I'm excited about that report. I'm working on it.
I was just going to ask, just hearing you mention, Candace, that y'all are meeting with the commissioner staff. I'm going back to that whole capacity piece. I'm wondering if it would make more sense if, because if we're struggling to get in contact with them, maybe it makes more sense that if certain groups are already meeting with certain staff, that maybe we ask questions for check-in as well, purposes, just so we can kind of not be doubling up, so to speak, because I know everybody's, you know, pretty inundated. So, and I also would imagine if they're working with a subgroup, that may not translate that they're not working with CRC. And so, you know, I could definitely see where if we're reaching out to the same commissioner's office and they're already speaking to you and Vadim, or, you know, they're probably thinking, well, we're already talking to them. So, you know, we don't need to reach out to schedule. So I'm wondering if there's maybe a way we can kind of streamline that.
Well, that meeting is just for our bodies to report, you know, whatever's going on to the commissioner's staff. But I think that's different than you building a relationship with the commissioner. And so I get what you're saying with the overlap, but I think I see it as still a distinct thing. And that meeting came about, like, you know, when we started getting all the advisory groups together and everything, kind of just, that was part of it. I honestly don't even remember how that happened, but there's another meeting I have to go to now. So, but yeah, I agree that I don't want us to have overlap, but I'm hoping that more of the bulk of what you do is your relationship. Yeah.
I'm just going to say, as somebody who has worked as a staffer, if you can minimize the amount of people you're meeting from committees and offices, it is very helpful. So I would definitely say if there's a way for us to kind of minimize that overlap, let's figure out how we can do that. Because I think that will also help us to build better relationships, especially if it's about connecting CRC with those offices as opposed to us as individuals to individuals in that office.
Okay, let's wrap up with public comments so that we can go ahead and end, okay? Anybody in the audience that would like to have public comment, please raise your hand and I will give you the ability to speak. And we will start with Mr. Handelman from CopWatch.
Hi, can you hear me? This is Dan Handelman again, Portland Cop Watch. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I have several comments, but I'll see if I can do them as quickly as I can. One thing about the new system and its potential to not be able to fulfill what's imagined in the charter is that at the very worst, what you'll end up is the current system where, imagine this, imagine if you, the board members, the CRC members, were hiring IPR's director and then telling them when they were doing a bad job and threatening to hire a new director if they didn't do it right. That would be the main change from this system, because at the very least, if you wipe out everything else that's could be up for negotiations with the contract and with state law, at the very least, you'd have an inverted system where the community members are basically hiring the staff. So think about that as you think about this transition. I brought this up before, but the officer-involved shooting report from OIR group was presented at a meeting that wasn't your meeting. The city code is very clear. I actually forgot to paste this in when I was talking about what CRC is supposed to do, but you're supposed to be helping implement those recommendations that come from those outside reviews. And I still don't understand for the life of me why the Interfaith Peace and Action Collaborative was chosen as a place to hold that public meeting instead of your meeting. So that's something to think about and make different or make better by having another forum. I'm a little confused about the IPR statement that they said they're allowed to answer questions if people ask them, because my understanding from the last meeting, I think all of you came to the same conclusion, was that the auditor said that the staff should not talk to anybody about the transition. In the past, there's only been one audit of the IPR in the almost 20 years it's been around. It was done in 2007, 2008 by an outside consultant named Eileen Luna Firebaugh. You still hear people talk about the Luna Firebaugh report. It's not necessary for the auditor's office to do the audit of the new system, but it has not been done. The IPR has not been audited for many years, which is one of the reasons that the recurring audit work group is very important. Regardless of what happens with the new system, the recurring audit work group was, my recollection was, they were getting started on looking at files about dismissals, mediations, investigating cases, to see if they could find any patterns from a small sample to then do an in-depth sample. And regardless of how long IPR is around or where the new system kicks in, the same problems could exist about cases getting dismissed inappropriately. So I think it's helpful to have that study to help advise the new body to make sure they don't mess things up. I'm very glad to hear that the IPR is going to be interviewing for new members for you, because my fear has been that what happened with the Community Oversight Advisory Board, the first group before the PCCP for the DOJ agreement, was that the city council stopped appointing new members and they basically drowned it in the bathtub. And that's why CRB ceased to exist. So I'm hoping that you continue your work. Sounds like you're committed to doing that, and that I'm looking forward to the new members being part of that to make sure that this system continues right up until the time when the new one's ready to take over. I just think that the community interest in the oversight system is bound to be dissipated because it's being projected as an 18-month to 2-year process, which is going to be a very long time to wait for the new system to come into place. So again, one thing that could be done, and we've started talking about the PPA contract, one thing that could be done is that some of the powers envisioned for the new board could be given to IPR and CRC while we're waiting for the new board to go into place. And you could keep pushing for the standard of review to be changed as part of that, part of the negotiations that are supposed to start on January 13. And my last comment is that around the director's report, I'm very disappointed. It used to be the director would say a report, we would not understand what they were saying, and we demanded that it be written down. The first director refused to do that. An interim director started writing them down, and now we're kind of getting, here's the written report, I'm not going to say the whole thing. So it's kind of turned around the other way. We've said over and over again that the list of cases that the IPR is reviewing, and there's 18 of them, should have a column that says, this is a captain or higher, this is a crowd case, this is an IPR director's choice case. I do not see how that in any way or shape or form can compromise the question of who's being investigated or why. It just would be a very good thing to help the community know what kind of cases IPR is handling. I really hope that the CRC will support that request for the IPR director reports. Look forward to the new People's Police report coming out at the end of this month, and thank you very much.
Real quick, Mr. Hanneman, can you say one more time, you want the report to, what were the columns? Tell me the columns.
So in the section that shows which cases the IPR is reviewing, it says date reported and case number, there's 18 cases, and there's like one B case and 17 C cases. So we know those are community member complaints, but we don't know if it's about use of force or about a crowd control situation, or if it's something where there was a conflict of interest with internal affairs. There are various reasons why IPR starts doing their own investigation, but those reasons aren't listed in the director's report. And I just think it would be helpful to know which cases came from which, you know, for which reason that the IPR chose to do the investigation.
Got it. Thank you. Okay, next. So again, if you want to speak, please make sure you raise your hand. So far, I only have Debbie Iona next. So last call for folks to raise your hand if you want to speak.
Debbie Iona, please go. This is Debbie Iona, League of Women Voters of Portland. I kind of want to go back to what you talked about towards the beginning of the meeting about what role you could play in this transition. And it seems to me, you know, I know that not a lot of people observe your meetings and a lot of people don't understand how the system works. And I think what a vital role that you could play would be as a resource to this commission that's supposed to work out the details about what you think works well in the system that we have, what you think needs to be improved. And because, you know, you live it, you know, every month when you come to these meetings, the system that we have, and I'm sure you have some pretty strong feelings about, wow, this part of what the system we have now is great. This is what I would like to change if it was up to me. And having, you know, sharing those kinds of things with the commission that's working at the details, I think will help them devise a stronger system that will serve the city well. And so that would be, my advice to you about how you could help this group figure out how to, work out the finer details of the new system. So, and just as a longtime observer of the IPR and the CRC, you know, I really think that the thing that's important about having you here is you're really a window for the public into what goes on behind the scenes. Like these appeal hearings. I mean, who in the public would know what like a directive was unless we see you grapple in an appeals process with how to interpret the directive that applies to whatever the allegations are in a complaint. And so I really think that is something that, you know, you could share with this new commission about why it's so important to have those kinds of aspects in our new system. So that was what I would encourage you to think about doing. And then the recurring audit work group. So back when they used to meet on a regular basis and the meetings were open to the public, you know, it's pretty clear how important that group is and how it does its work. And I really hope that with Director Caldwell's help that you'll be able to figure out how to move forward. When I've been thinking about this particular thing is that, you know, they were working on dismissals as Mr. Handelman pointed out. You can almost, it seems like you could pick up where they left off. They had a questionnaire that the committee members, work group members were using when they reviewed the files, and they, you know, looked at the important aspects of the dismissals and were they done appropriately. And then they would give feedback then to the IPR about whether or not those dismissals were done as they should be. So it seems like you could get a new batch of cases and look at those and see if the IPR is following the rules that are set for them as far as dismissals go. And then the last thing I want to say is I agree with Mr. Handelman. That was my impression from last month's CRC meeting that the IPR staff was not supposed to talk to anybody about the transition. And so I'm glad to hear that that is not the case, that they will be able to serve as resources. So that good news. So thank you very much for your work. It was a really interesting conversation. I so appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you, Ms. Iona. Anyone else? Last call. All right. And then there's a question. I don't know the answer. Does anybody real quick know the answer to the question in the chat? What day in February is the hearing for the settlement agreement? I don't know.
Do you know Ross or Irene?
I can find that real quick. I want to say it's like February 20th or somewhere around there, but let me look in my...
And Mr. Hanneman, are you trying to raise your hand again or should I lower it? I'm lowering it. Raise it again if you want to. Oh, we have one more person that wants to talk, so we'll do that.
It's February 25th, sorry.
Okay, February 25th, and then our last person to talk, Barb. There you go. Barb, go ahead and give your public testimony, please. Make sure to unmute. I can't hear you if you're speaking, you're muted.
Yeah, no. I'm good. Sorry. My suggestion would be you guys are thinking of things you guys can do, and short term might be having something to present to Judge Simon at the settlement agreement hearing, if you think PSEP has been doing a good job with community engagement. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Barb.
You know, I just had a thought. Wait, can I talk now?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, maybe we would want to like put out a little survey to like past CRC members too, with just and to ourselves as a way to just compile things we'd want to continue, things to stop, things, what was the third one? Things to
start, stop, keep.
Keep, start, stop, keep. Yeah. And cause that could be a really robust digest that we could just sort of hand over.
That sounds like a good idea. Okay. I put it on the parking lot to-do list, so we can talk about that over email or something. Any final thoughts, comments, questions? Now's the time.
Well, I do want to make sure we thank Director Caldwell and Irene for all their work, as this is our last meeting before the end of the year. I mean, maybe some of us will interface with staff, but if you could give all the staff at IPR, our thanks and best wishes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Hope everybody has a good holiday, even though they're kind of limited these days. But yeah, we'll talk to y'all soon. Thank you much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.